Good day, South Dakota, and welcome to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. On today's program, we'll talk about Anthem, the company that was recently hacked, exposing data from 80 million customers. This wasn't the first misstep for a company that wants to centralize healthcare data in California. Also, devastating news for nerds this week, Radio Shack has declared bankruptcy. And our old friend Net Neutrality is in the news again this week. Of course, we'll take your questions and comments. Email us at midday@sdpb.org or send a tweet to @sdpb. You can join the discussion on our Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio or call now 800-456-0766. Again, you can email suggestions or questions to our guests today, Joel Brovelite, Amos Aesop, and Jeff Litterick. That email address again is midday@sdpb.org. Stay tuned and we'll talk tech and more after this news from member-supported SDPB Radio. And welcome back to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. We've gathered the experts to help guide you in a variety of areas that you may have questions about. They're here in the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls. Joel Brovelite is here and Amos Aesop. Hi, Amos.
Hey, how you doing?
I am fantastic. And from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre, now known as the Bureau, Jeff Litterick. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
Good day, sir. You can call, text, tweet, email your questions, whatever you'd like to do. Or simply swing by facebook.com/techradio, post your comments and questions there. Guys, before we get going, I did just post the link from the last show, for the podcast of the last show. I thought it was such a great show. We had Victoria Darling, for those that didn't listen, 2 weeks ago. She rewrites people's resumes and LinkedIn profiles and things for people, but she really is a headhunter too. People call her to find people to hire for the gaming industry or for other coding or whatever. So she's kind of a headhunter for the tech industry. Had her on that program, and I just put a link to the entire program because I thought the whole thing was great. Great stories from EA, a company she used to work for. Many of us know that company well. So there's also some tips there she provided, and there's some things that you can do to polish up your resume. Anyway, on Facebook, facebook.com/techradio, you'll find that link. If you're not on Facebook, you just decided not to do that. Back on the Radio News website, it's at SDPB as well. So go to sdpb.org, click on Radio, and you will find that interview under Dakota Midday Tech Radio. As well, it's right there for you to listen to again. Anyway, welcome to the show. The phone number again, 800-456-0766, the number to call. At SDPB is our Twitter handle, and the email address midday@sdpb.org. Perhaps the most popular way of getting a hold of us, Amos.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we've got a couple of really, I guess, big gigantuan things that we want to talk about on the show today that have to do with hacking and some other sort of heavyweight materials. Of course, we've got to talk about net neutrality a little bit because that was just in the news and voted on and prognosticated. And I'm still not exactly clear what path we're going down there. But first of all, heartbreaking news for me, Radio Shack is closing its doors after all these years. Amos and I were just kind of lamenting that. I mean, where else is the neighborhood electronics shop as far as, you know, I don't know what you did in high school or before that or after that, or if you had little projects that you did that required diodes or resistors or a breadboard or, or whatever, but that was the place, spool of wire, anything.
Yeah. And I don't know, you know, what that led to was people tinkering and playing and, learning. And I just don't know if that's going to exist anymore. I know that stuff is still available. You can order it online. In fact, you probably get it cheaper online. But when you've got a piece that's gone bad or you're missing a piece and you could run downtown or you could run to the mall and pick up that little obscure piece of technology that allowed you to do whatever, you know, it was easy to do. And that's going away now. People are less likely to impulse purchase those sorts of things just to tinker and play around with.
Yeah, Radio Shack was really my first introduction to computers. The TRS-80, I don't know if anybody remembers that. could walk and be walking. I just remember walking down that long hallway in the mall, and there was Radio Shack off on the right, and on the display was the TRS-80 computer,
mm-hmm.
and you could walk in there and mess with it. You know, occasionally I think the salespeople were just like, "Oh, what are these kids doing all flocked around this, you know, this weird machine that we have to sell now?" Or I don't know, but I remember spending hours in Radio Shack just messing with the TRS-80 and really learning how to, you know, code a few things in BASIC to make the screen say some funny things, you know. I don't know. I think that the salespeople probably thought they were babysitters back then.
Well, you know, and that they just Radio Shack just didn't keep up. They just didn't innovate. They didn't create the you know, spectacular displays that maybe some of the larger box stores like Best Buy did. If they'd have kept up, if the Radio Shack's physical stores were bigger, where they could put more of that technology and put it more on display, and maybe less of those shelves of random cabling or pieces or diodes or transistors or whatever was hanging on the wall, they might have done better. Also, Radio Shack, they might have could have used like a renaming or a rebranding. Too.
TV Shack there for a while, and now Internet Shack.
Yeah,
well, that's
Phone
the problem
Shack for quite a while too.
What's that, Jeff?
It was most of their profits were actually coming from cell phone sales for quite a while, so it was the Phone Shack for a while too. So.
Yeah, you got to fit the phone in there, don't you?
Well, the model just doesn't work anymore. You know, you guys were talking about, you know, you need a part and you can go down and maybe Radio Shack might have it. And that's still the case. You know, that's about the only reason I ever enter Radio Shack is because I'm looking for some wacky cable. Or, frankly, I'm in some other weird town and they happen to have a Radio Shack and I need a XLR cable for a mic or something. That's about your only luck. But, you know, Walmart started moving into their territory. You could buy cables for things at Walmart. And, of course, the Internet was the real killer. I mean, you want to buy a box of transistors. Why would you pay $4 at Radio Shack and you pay 45 cents, you know? Yeah. And that's the deal. Although it's worth noting that this only affects the U.S. locations. They have lots of locations in Mexico, and that's not affected at all. Mostly, I think, because their model is different in Mexico and internationally. So,
well, should be interesting. Just holds a special place in my heart. Wanted to reflect a little bit on
that. As well it should, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they had a good run.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, the killer, you're absolutely right, Radio Shack. If it was, Rotary Dial Shack, it would be just as bad. Mm-hmm. You know, same reason Gateway 2000 had to change their name before the year 2000. Because it's just you got to be careful when you name your company.
I remember that.
For things
I worked
like
for Gateway 2000, and then
I did
worked
too.
For Gateway.
Yeah.
So did I, actually.
Yeah. Anyway, folks, join the discussion here. Again, our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. Perhaps you have a funny story you'd like to share about Radio Shack in your life, a project you took on, or an experience you had in a store, share it with us. We'd love to see that. Facebook.com/radio or tweet it. Go ahead and hashtag Tech Radio if you'd like, or tweet it to us at SDPB if you would. Call us, 800-456-0766, the other way to interface with our guests today. Again, Joel Brovelight is here, Amos Asif and Jeffrey Litterick are here to answer your questions and take your calls. On a little bit more serious note, so I wasn't aware of this company called Anthem, but apparently they had 80 million records of of healthcare things as well, but
they're actually the second largest insurance company in the United States. So, though, they're one of behind the scenes kind of thing that carries a lot of the health insurance industry.
And apparently they're trying to centralize a database, at least in California, of healthcare records. So, you know, there's been some fight about that because this company hasn't been real great about consumer privacy in the past, and there are people that didn't want to see this happen.
Well, there are rules in the Affordable Care Act and before that that required data for your healthcare providers to be centralized, so that if you go to a doctor, in X, and then you go to Y, they found out that you got OxyContin here, so they probably shouldn't give you another entire dose there, or other, good reasons. You might be they might find out you're allergic to something over here, so that should transfer. I think there's nobody on the planet, if you ask, hey, do you think one doctor, when you visit them, should know have the records from the other? Everybody's going to say yes. But the problem is there are too many of these companies out there like Anthem, which if you want an analog, Anthem is kind of the Cisco of the health insurance world. Everybody knows about Cisco unless nobody knows about Cisco. You hear of Apple, you hear of IBM, but Cisco runs all these deep products, everything in the background. You don't hear about Cisco till you see a commercial. Same thing with Anthem. They run all these databases and they support insurance companies, but they're not the the Allstate or the, you know, the insurance names that you know, the Red Cross and the, you know, sure, Blue Shield and this, that, and the other thing. So the problem is this data has to be collated and has to be accessible to everybody, but there are dozens of ways that that's supposed to be done, and they're not all compatible, which is kind of a drag. It seems really strange that if you go to a doctor at Avera, you know, you cannot get the same data without a lot of paperwork and a lot of people's hands on it at Sanford, but that's where we're at right now.
Well, apparently all you need to do is use the internet,
right,
and you can get
well
to it.
And that's of course the hilarious part. If you can hack into it, you probably have way better access than if you were to actually ask for the records.
So Jeff, let me ask you this, and I don't know if you can answer this question or not, but so was this more this hack, do we know, was it more negligence on Anthem's part, or was it simply the fact that these guys have like 200 credible threats a month of people trying to get in and hack them that they're stopping? Is it just is hacking so brute force that eventually, of course, somebody's going to get in? Is that more the case?
This is a lot like Sony and the Target hacks and all this stuff. And until all the details come out, we don't know if they were criminally negligent or not, or it just was a good attack. It's kind of get back to what we had to in the past, where sooner or later, it's only really a matter of time, especially if you're the big targets. And if you hold this many records, it's a big target. And what they grabbed was all your usernames, social security numbers, addresses. They didn't take credit card data and other stuff that was sitting in the same database, but they could have. They got everything they needed for identity theft. And then it took, and this kind of ties into another point that's going to make national news here soon, is they took 8 days to notify their customers that, hey, your identity information has been stolen. Well, one thing to remember and ties back to South Dakota is while 46, 47 other states have data breach laws on notification, South Dakota doesn't. There's actually a push to standardize that at the national level. The White House came out with a statement that they would wish to introduce legislation or someone to do it in Congress to actually standardize across the board so that when you get hacked, because it's a matter of time, not if, that you will be notified about what was stolen about you. So this is only going to add fuel to that fire to get a nationwide standard because right now all the other states that have it, which are 46, 47 other states, it's all of a patchwork, and every state's a little bit different on who needs to be notified and when and how and stuff like that. So this is certainly going to add fuel to that fire. It's the second largest breach in existence. So
okay, I hadn't realized that was the case. Is there a push nationally or in the tech industry or, you know, in any kind of field to standardize any kind of security if you're going to be handling this type of data, you need to be at this sort of ISO level? Or I mean, is there somewhat of a comparable thing on the data side of things?
Well, there's private stuff like the PCI compliance, where if you handle credit card data or process credit card data or transmit or store it, you have to meet the PCI compliance standards. And that's a private industry. That's basically Visa and MasterCard making the rules of how you have to protect your data, what kind of protection mechanism you need to be in, where can you store your data and where you can't, what you can store and what you can't store. The medical records are under HIPAA requirements, but that's more of a fine-based kind of thing. the teeth is after the data breach, you're going to lose a lot of money. And there's been companies that have lost a lot of money over HIPAA breaches on medical information. But, you know, even the PCI, it's more policy. You must encrypt. It doesn't go in and tells you how to encrypt this or to what levels your minimums must always be at. And it's a changing kind of thing because the encryption you're using this year is broken next year, so you have to keep upping your game. So
sure.
PCI is probably getting the best, and they're starting to mandate a lot of minimums, and they actually have different versions where every year they're increasing the security requirements. But, mm-hmm. you know, that's a private, and that's, you know, that's kind of voluntary. If you don't process credit card data, you don't have to abide by any of it. So, or if you don't want to handle credit card data at all, you don't have to abide by it at all because it's a, you know, it's just for credit card. And it's just for credit card data. Now, if they apply it to all types of data, we'd probably be a lot more secure, but it's really a patchwork. There's some federal laws on higher education and student information. There's HIPAA, which basically sets general policies and stuff, but then fines if you mishandle data. And then there's the PCI compliance stuff. But it's really a patchwork. Now, there's a little push in the industry, but I think with this data breach, we're going to get more and more push to have more standardized data handling security techniques.
You would think after Target and UPS, and there's been a whole lot of really high visibility, people and high numbers of people being affected, that this is just kind of a pile on, and eventually.
And you know, I think the way it's really going to go is not that. The standards and the security is going to get so much better, although it will in these companies. What's really going to happen is the data that we give out and how we give it out and whom we give it to is really going to change. And that's what I see changing. You know, you see privacy rules being made transparent at places like Google and Facebook and Twitter. And you can set the amount of data that you want them to have access to, and you can change that. Whereas when Facebook came out, you know, you didn't really have control over any of the data that you put up. And that's the same with all these insurance companies. You know, we may not want to give them, or maybe it's Best Buy or Target, we may not want to give them all of the data. And along with that, you know, more secure forms of payment are going to do that too, so that our credit card information isn't necessarily even accessible. So I think the way we give our data to these companies and retailers is going to change as much as, if not more than, the security and the firewalls and all of that. Because as soon as, I mean, everybody here knows it and everybody listening knows, there's no such thing as unhackable. There's no such thing as an encryption that can't be broken. And there's no network that can't be accessed either through, you know, sneaker net means or actually getting a hold of the internet. So I think both ways have to be changed.
Yeah, if you can have the best encryption in the world, but if you've got somebody on the inside, that's not going to help you.
Yeah, and then that's not an endorsement of don't put your data out there and don't use the internet to buy things. Just, you know, instead of just typing your credit card in online every place you go, you know, maybe you're going to stick with an Amazon or an Apple or a place that is going to protect your data, and maybe you're going to use a form of payment like Apple Pay or Google Wallet that actually doesn't even give them your credit card number in the first place. You're just authorizing a single transaction, but it makes it convenient for you. So I think those are the real ways that we're going to bust this chain.
Sure.
Quickly.
We do need to take a break. When we come back, we, of course, will take more of your questions and emails. 800-456-0766, the number to call. At SDPB is the Twitter handle. And, of course, the email address is midday, MIDDAY, at SDPB.org. We'll be back right after this.
Program funding provided by your support and by Home Federal Bank for your personal, business, and agribusiness financial needs. Home Federal Bank, it's your time. Learn more at homefederal.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
TV's America's Test Kitchen is now cooking up an hour of fresh fun on SDPB Radio. This is host Christopher Kimball inviting you to tune in for all new taste tests. Plus, we revive lost recipes from all around America. We'll also hear from experts on everything from chocolate to olive oil. We also get answers to questions from our listeners from all around the world. America's Test Kitchen Radio, Sunday mornings at 11, 10 Mountain on SDPB Radio.
Program funding is provided by your support and by the South Dakota Cultural Heritage Center in Pierre, open 7 days a week, offering adventures and learning opportunities for all visitors. Learn more at history.sd.gov.
And luck.
Yeah. Welcome back to Tech Radio. We're joining midday today and taking over the airwaves. We had an interesting note, Doug, from Winter. He says, before it was Radio Shack, it was Allied Radio.
Even better.
And the catalog there, he says, was an education in itself. I mean, can you imagine getting this catalog of all this electronics and just...
It's like a paper version of the internet. Yeah,
you know, you just your imagination would just go wild. It was like the Sears catalog. Oh, I can buy that. I wonder what I can do with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like the Sears catalog for nerds. I mean, that's just amazing. Allied Radio, that's great. Well, all right. Here's the transition into the next story. So the company that came on board to kind of help control radio, the FCC, is now saying, well, you know, the internet, that's kind of like a utility. That's kind of like a, you know, a radio network or a broadcast network or whatever. We want to have some say in the way that the internet's being run. And so net neutrality is upon us. Amos, have you been following this?
You know, actually, this has been going on for so long that I've sort of lost interest in it, which is sad, which is actually why this is going to eventually someday cause some problems, because I think everybody's getting sick of it.
Oh, yeah,
it's been going on for so long, and there's been so many arguments back and forth, and so many people have been making the same argument that people are just getting... You're bored or tired or just lackluster in making sure things work the way they should. And net neutrality, for those who aren't aware of that, I know we've described it before, but basically making sure that everybody's got equal access to the internet regardless of paying higher or lower fees for additional speed or additional access. Now, obviously, you have to pay your ISP for greater access.
This is more on the back end,
the wholesale.
If you're a company that's selling something on the internet, it
charging Netflix more because they have a lot of data that travels across, say, a local provider here, but then that in turn is going to end up costing the consumer more. So, you just get wore down after a while. Mm-hmm.
The guy that coined the phrase net neutrality bemoans the fact that he coined such a boring and nondescriptive phrase. There's a great article interview. He's like, man, I wish I had come up with something else, because just as soon as you say the word net neutrality, people's eyes glaze over, just like everybody listening to us right now. It's a very big deal, and it's definitely come to a head with the FCC chairman doing what people have asked for all along, to declare the internet a utility in the same way that railroads were and telephone was way back when. And honestly, I think if you hit up anybody that's ever used the internet, do you think the internet is a utility on the same scale as water, electric, and phone? I don't think there's anybody that's going to argue with you on that. In fact, I did a little short survey when I heard this, and I asked five people, and I said, and I gave them water, electricity, internet, telephone, and internet was number two on almost everybody's list on which one you would give up off of those four.
I was just thinking of the checklist.
Obviously not scientific, but
yeah, I was just thinking of the checklist. You know, you move into a new apartment, what are you going to go get? Well, you got to go pay your deposit and get your electricity signed up and your water.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
for most people, I think electricity was third after internet, because you can as long as you have access to the internet. Of course, that would mean you'd have to have it wirelessly. I personally would rather have internet than electricity in a lot of cases, depending on the temperature and how what your heat is, whether it's gas or whatever.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I want to hook up, because I don't need telephone. I mean, that's not even a thing, but that is a utility.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. Well, that's very interesting. And yeah, let's
water. Water's first, though.
Let's put a poll up. We'll throw a poll up later, and we'll find out if people think it's a utility and how in what order they would hook their stuff. But it's certainly certainly one of those things you check if you're checking into buying, you get into an apartment or whatever. You're going to find out if my garbage taken care of? Is my electricity? Oh, they have internet for all the people that live there. That's checked.
Railroad's
off.
Not even on your list.
No, it's not.
It is a utility though.
But anyway, it's back in the news. The chairman unveiled Wednesday a proposal that's going to subject the mobile and the data broadband providers with these utility like regulations. And so to sum this all up, it's basically saying it's banning paid prioritization. So a company cannot say, hey, give me some more bandwidth, to my customers, give me more bandwidth. And it blocks the throttling of lawful content and services.
Well, and, other things, not just bandwidth. I mean, that's what gets talked about. But instead of just altering bandwidth, a provider can shift traffic on searches and what websites come up by default. If somebody, if Google decides to... Not that they would do this necessarily, but if Google says, hey, if somebody uses our search, make that about, 50% faster than if somebody uses Bing. Or, take it on a smaller level, which could be done. I want anybody that searches for boots to come to my website where I sell boots. I don't want them to go to these other websites, and I'll pay you for that. Without rules on that, which is what we're talking about, those things could be done easily.
Yep. Of course, Verizon... turn the other side of the coin here, says that heavily regulating the internet is unnecessary. In fact, it's counterproductive. Of course, they've got their arguments as well. So we'll have to see how this all comes down to. But there's, cable industry trade groups has opinions on this. Verizon being wireless, but they've also got a very non-wired side or non-wireless side as well. Uh-huh. So they've got their say in it. Venture capitalists have their say in it. IT industry has their say in it. It's a multifaceted thing that comes from a lot of different areas. And it's and of course with the boring name, it's hard to get in all this. But this is the type of show we need to mention this because it is in the news, and hopefully they'll have some rules promulgated and has some things decided soon so that we don't have to mention it on the show anymore. How would that be?
I think it'll be 2 years at least we'll still be talking about this, at least.
All right. Well, let's move on. We have a question from Nancy. She writes, hey, computer guys, I love your show. A regular listener who needs advice on my MacBook, the last generation made. Because Apple and the university that she works for will soon not support iOS 10.6. They won't allow it on the later this year. Upgrading to a new operating system and more memory looks better to me than moving to a PC. A newer Mac is an option. What would you guys do?
Wait, so what's not supported where?
10.6, iOS 10.6 on her Apple is not going to be supported on her work network anymore. The network is going to upgrade past that. It's a policy they're putting in place on their network.
Okay.
Yes, and that's mostly due to the fact that, and this happens on all operating systems, it's difficult to keep up with security patches on older operating systems. 10.6, if I remember correctly, is at least 7 years old, maybe older than that. And it's being supported as far as, vulnerability patches, but it's not being supported on networks as far as security. And honestly, that's just safer. People just shouldn't complain that they can't use, and I'm not saying she is, but that you can't use 5 year or older operating systems and then be mad that your credit card data got stolen. I mean, it's just that is the 1-2 punch on that.
Mm-hmm.
So her question is,
yes,
should I get a PC or should I get a new Mac?
Or should I upgrade the old one, get some more memory?
No. I mean, certainly, unless it's a budget thing, if you're going to upgrade to the latest operating system, which comes for free on all of the new Macs, I think your best bet is to get a new Mac, especially if you've got a machine that's running 10.6 and you want to upgrade it to run the latest, which it probably will. But, you know, you're talking a couple $100s. Just you may probably need to put a new hard drive or more memory. You know, trade that Mac in if you can find a place. Sell it. I'm not sure if it's the school's or yours. Certainly if they're providing it, that's the way I would go. So, yeah, definitely get the new Mac and you know, you'll get a faster speed and it'll be more secure. You'll get the operating system. That's definitely what I would do.
Ah, good news for Nancy. She gets a new Mac.
Right.
What could be better than that? Hey, other Mac news, replacing iPhoto? Is that right?
Yes, iPhoto is kind of being phased out.
And that's good news, right?
I just depending on how entrenched you are into iPhoto, it's ultimately, you know, Apple does this after a while in the same way that Google does, although not quite as abruptly and painfully as Google, you know, when Google, discontinues a product, they just kind of pull the plug and everybody, you know, has about a month to scramble and figure out what to do. iPhoto is going to be kind of transitioned, into just kind of the built-in photo, to your phone or your iPad or your desktop. So all of the features are going to be available. The bonus is you're going to have online secure storage for your photos. And if you're anything like my mother-in-law or my wife, you know, you might have hundreds of thousands of photos. That's not an exaggeration. That you just literally do not have space for on your computer. And then when you go in, it scrolls so darn slow and then you're mad. It's a good thing. If you're using iPhoto out there, they're not going to take it off of your computer. It's just going to be transitioned off as you upgrade operating systems. So if you like what you've got, you know, in a reference to the last question, you know, just don't update and you'll be good to go. Maybe make a copy of it and use that standalone computer, although I would highly recommend transitioning. It's just safer and easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you hear about the $700,000 in Apple gift cards that were stolen and then used to buy Apple products?
I didn't hear
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's
it wasn't
one of the,
my house.
One of the biggest, it wasn't for your house.
I wish.
This week, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office indicted five people, and it was kind of an inside job to steal these, but then they used those gift cards.
Can you imagine sitting typing all those gift cards in, you know, hundreds and thousands of gift cards to buy Apple products? Because those are probably, I mean, they're not $1,000 gift cards, right? They're just $150, $25.
What
a nightmare. Some they deserve that steal if they're going to spend that long doing it. Anyway, you
But they go out and buy all these Apple products and then just turn around and resell them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Use them, of course, for personal use. But how many iPads could you possibly use?
Well, you know, the funny part about that is that's going to be less and less possible. You know, it's already the kind of thing where it's hard. It's a lot harder to steal phones and resell them because they're just so easy to lock down from both the manufacturer and the people that purchase them. You know, the market for used electronics sold illegally or on the gray or black market just getting smaller and smaller just because they're just so much more secure. You know, if I lose my phone and I don't run over it, I can we'll tell you that story later. I can lock it down anywhere I am. And you know, basically it's a complete brick forever. So it's just not worth buying or selling.
So what you're saying is eventually Apple would realize that this was a fraudulent purchase.
In fact, that's probably what happened.
And then just take that thing and make it zap it.
Yeah, and that can be done with all of the products, and it's not just Apple that does that.
So if some sucker picked up a good deal on a MacBook, all of a sudden that MacBook ain't going to work anymore.
Well,
it received stolen property.
Unless that person is never, ever intending on using it on the Internet, which, you know, I'm not sure what you're going to buy an Apple laptop or any laptop for that matter. I was like, I don't do Internet, but I want a shiny new laptop. It's just not going to happen.
Probably even
as soon as it hits the Internet, the serial numbers, you know, they can find it. So
the very first thing when you turn on your iPad is put it on the network and get the thing, you know, going with your iTunes account, and that's... Yeah, you're not even going to make it that far.
Yep, absolutely. So that's probably how they found them, frankly.
Yeah,
So kids, don't steal, you know, new devices because you'll get caught.
Yeah, don't, you know, if it's too good of a deal on a brand new
iPad, you don't want to knock on your door at 9 p.m. on a Friday saying, hey, you received stolen goods, you know. That's no good. So no,
probably not. And they did indicate that this was not an easy thing to do. This is a very sophisticated ring that did this. They stole personal information from around 200 people to fund the purchase of these Apple gift cards. And it was not an unsophisticated thing. So not something you're going to see in the news absolutely every day. We are again at break time. We do have to take a quick break and catch up on the news and hear from our sponsors. Again, you can call, tweet, text, email your questions to us, or simply swing by facebook.com/techradio. Douglas, the guy that told us about the Allied Radio program, put a special link out there for you that has to do with farming and tech and how some farmers are having a little bit of a tough time with some of the new technology coming down the pike and getting things fixed in a expedient manner. But Doug, you're going to enjoy that if you pop over to our Facebook site. Facebook.com/techradio is where you'll find that link. Of course, our phone number, 800-456-0766. Don't be shy. SDPB at SDPB is our Twitter handle. And the email address is midday, MIDDAY, at SDPB.org. Back right after this.
Programming support is provided by your annual financial gift and by Mount Marty College, a private Catholic Benedictine liberal arts college. More at mtmc.edu. Mount Marty College. Put your faith in us.
They survived jungle mud, maggots, even an anaconda. And now our Sci-Fi Book Club discusses David Grand's tale of Amazonian exploration, The Lost City of Z. I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday as we ask what really happened to explorer Percy Fawcett. All on Science Friday from PRI.
This afternoon at 1 p.m. Central, noon Mountain, on SDPB Radio.
This program is made possible by your sustaining donations and by Loft Advisors, private banking redefined. Learn more about the Loft experience at loftadvisors.com. That's loftadvisors.com.
In that making your own tools? Or?
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, we're talking about how one thing we didn't mention with Radio Shack going under in the United States is with the rise of 3D printing in the next few years, buying little weird little parts is going to go by the wayside. There's going to be new places where you can go and say, hey, I need this part printed out. Or maybe you have a printer at home. You can buy a Dremel 3D printer for $1,000 now. Dremel makes them. Huh. And you can make all sorts of little things. All you need is the design. So I really see that is going to be the new, there's going to be an online Radio Shack type of thing where you need a gear for your vacuum cleaner. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to search online. You just find the blueprint, print it out. You're good to go.
Oh, how many times have you had a little thing and the little plastic gear broke on it and it just completely disables the whole thing?
I know. Now 1,400 times, actually.
You could go 3D print yourself a new one,
mm-hmm.
and your thing works again.
Yeah, and it's not just plastic. You know, they've been 3D printing in metal, polycarbonate, wood, just all sorts of things. So that's the rise of that is a big, big deal.
All right. A couple of reminders. The next show, Tech Radio show, February 20th. So a couple of weeks. Be here for that. We'll be just in the midst of gymnastics and just getting ready to go into wrestling on the old SDPB calendar. Right now, we're knee-deep in one-act play festival over at just across the across town here at Sioux Falls O'Gorman. What a fabulous facility they have.
It's the nice new theater. It's
literally
theater.
Sitting in the control room all day yesterday, and as the students would file through to do their plays, they're like, oh, wow, you know, look at this place. It's a brand new facility. It's got all the things. Very, very. Everybody's saying, oh, we're very envious of your facility here. What a great place. Anyway, SDPB is there. We are providing coverage, photo coverage online of each play. We Facebook those out, occasionally tweet a few, put them in our gallery on Flickr. And then, of course, tomorrow when the results come in from the competition, we will have those online for people just as soon as we possibly can with the photos of the winners there as well. So if you're into one-act plays, you might want to check it out on our website, sdpb.org. And I think it's /OneActPlays. And you can go in and look at the A's, the B's, and the double A's and see some photos from those various productions. Saw a lot of really great, those kids have put in a lot of work on coming to a state competition like that. And it really shows. It was some fabulous shows yesterday. Of course, they're going on all day today, and then they wrap up tomorrow. SDPB.org, of course, in conjunction with the South Dakota High School Activities Association, doing that this year. Anyhow, getting back to it, February 20th, our next show, and we would love to hear your comments and questions on our Facebook page for that show. Get them in just as quick as you can. And I don't even want to mention March dates. March 6th, of course, right in the middle of the girls' basketball tournament is our next program. And then 2 weeks from that, March 20th, again, we will be on the air. So either I copied and pasted the dates incorrectly, or we're on the exact same dates in February and March, the 6th and 20th.
Yeah.
Could that be?
It can be, because the dates match up exactly in February and March.
Then it wasn't a misstep on my part. We are on the 6th and the 20th. Easy to remember, then, for both February and March. Got you covered for that. Again, we pasted the links from 2 weeks ago. Victoria Darling was on. You never did tell me how you know Victoria.
Well, when she was at EA, you know, I kind of met her there at a tech conference.
Oh, cool. Anyway, we have that entire podcast posted along with some tips from her. I have 5 or 6 or 7 point tips on really good ones on what you should and should not do with your resume if you're looking to get a tech job.
Yeah, and she knows, too.
And she knows. And she's also available to help you if you need it. But some tips from her and our show online for you at any time. We are here, of course, again, to take your questions and comments. 800-456-0766, the number to call. And at SDPB is the Twitter account. And I think I've mentioned the Facebook account several times, facebook.com/techradio, for all those links for you as well.
Ken?
Yes, sir.
This is kind of a breaking kind of news and stuff over the past day or so. But, you know, it kind of segments in. We were talking about how they're trying to do identity fraud and stuff. Well, one of the news stories that's breaking is how they're using that information to commit identity fraud, and that is to actually do tax returns in your name with your information and fraudulent tax returns and get your information back. The state of Minnesota just stopped accepting all TurboTax state filings because of many potential fraudulent returns. Alabama did the same after flagging 16,000 returns, and what people are finding is they're logging into TurboTax and it's saying their taxes have already been filed when they haven't filed anything yet. This is big with the feds too, not just the states, and this is one that's growing year after year. Is basically people impersonating you, putting in bogus information to get tax returns back, and then when you go to file, no, you've already filed your taxes. Of course, it's all bad information for the most cases, but you know that ties one of the ways where, yes, they steal their identities from the insurance company, but then they use it to file tax return forms to get returns. So, yep. TurboTax just announced they are stopping all state e-files. So no more filing for state taxes at this time. They will re-enable after they do investigations. Federal taxes are still being filed through TurboTax if you use that service for e-file. But all state filing, South Dakota, of course, doesn't have really an income tax to file, but all state filings are on hold at this point.
Is there a way, I don't know if there are rankings out there, but what's a good way to select a filer, Jeff? Of course, there's a lot of free ones out there that are linked to actually right from the IRS website, but there are a number of pay ones as well. Is there a reason I should use a paid-for service? I know they're $9.99, probably up to $29.99 for some online services, or should I use the free one?
I've kind of used both in the past, and what I found is it depends on the level of complexity of your taxes. Usually, if you want to start doing itemized deductions, most of them are going to force you into a pay model of at least a little bit for the extra work and stuff. The free stuff is basically, you know, your simple taxes. And if you're not doing itemized deductions or you're just doing, you know, a 1040 without a whole bunch of extra sheets, it's perfectly fine, and the free ones work really great at it. If you own a home and you already detect property taxes, you know, mortgage, all that stuff, itemized, especially if you have state income tax, you usually will have to pay to get the best discount. And a couple of them, at least two of them, including TurboTax, is one where you go through the whole process online for free, and then it will tell you if you pay for the deluxe version, this is what you'll get back. If you get the free version, this is what you get back on a standard 1040 form without itemized deduction. So it does the process for you, and it tells you, can you save more or not? And then you can make the decision if you want to, you know, pay a little bit to get a bigger refund, if you would get a bigger refund. There's no guarantee on that. Or just stay with the free one because you get the same return either way. So,
mm-hmm. I like the companies that will actually offer you to talk to somebody if you'd like to, and they'll stand behind, you know, in case you're ever audited, will show up and be there on your behalf as well. I like that. I haven't used that, but I like the option of that. You know, I have a question. There's actually somebody on the other end that I can call.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it really depends on the complexity, especially if you own a business or you're self-employed and stuff. Your taxes become a lot more complex fairly quickly. So, in those cases, yeah, you really need audit protection and stuff for whatever service you use.
Hmm. All right. Good luck with your taxes this year, guys. I just reuse the same one I always use every year because my data is already in there. They basically say, have you changed jobs or, you know, are you pregnant? And I'm like, no. and then I just kind of fill in the new numbers and go from there. I don't.
You remember on all those services, because this is a big problem with fraud tax returns, is not only do they have your last year's data, it makes it very easy for someone to log in if they crack your password as you end file a fraud one and have the return go to a different bank account or a different address fairly quickly. So it makes it, that's a high target because it makes it very easy for them to commit fraud. So I would make sure you use strong passwords. And if you do get an email alert saying, you know, someone's trying to reset your password or something, pay really good attention to it if it's coming from your tax preparer.
That is one thing. Yeah, you're always taking a leap of faith when you put all that stuff in the cloud. I do have a secure password on there. One thing I do like about this particular company, every time I do something, it sends me an email and it says, hey, you just did this, or you just printed out a copy from last year, or you just changed your password, or you just did this. It seems annoying at the time, but it's just one of those little assurances that they're kind of keeping tabs on things for you. And I guess I really appreciate that as well.
Yeah, the best companies will do that. And it is a security mechanism, kind of a defense in depth to alert you, so if you're paying attention, you can see fraudulent activity before it gets worse. So
yeah. On just getting to the closing moments of the show, I didn't want to let the show escape before talking about the almost untimely death of your cell phone.
Yes.
Now, did you? I got to ask this because I see the pouch. I don't see the phone. Did you stick with the 6 or the 6 Plus? Because you had them both, right?
I did. Yeah. Well, my wife has the 6. I have the iPhone,
okay.
6 Plus.
Okay.
You know, I'll tell the entire story again. Make it quick. I have this set of headphones that I wear all the time. It's kind of like they're Bluetooth headphones. And they sit around my neck, and then I can retract the earpiece, and I use them for listening to the radio, streaming, or I make calls on them. And it's Bluetooth, and it's NFC, or near-field communication. So whenever my Bluetooth headset gets separated from my phone, it buzzes me and says, hey, it's out of range, I can't use it. So I was in a hurry, I got in the car, and I drove away, and it buzzed me. I said, oh, my phone... I must have left my phone, so I swung back and parked in the front and went inside and couldn't find my phone. My headset's still buzzing me. It's like, can't find the phone, can't find the phone. But that's because I went inside. I came back out, and it was laying on the ground right where I had left from, and my tire track was right next to it. So it wasn't even an inch away from being run over. And all because my Bluetooth headset, frankly, had I left it there, it was the middle of the street.
Sure.
It would have been run over at some point by someone. So I'm just lucky that I both didn't run over it and that I got buzzed that it had fallen on the ground.
It's weird that you got prompted by your headphones.
It's just one of the many reasons I really like this headset. That same thing is going to be built into the Apple Watch, by the way. So there you go.
There really should be more reminders that you're walking away from your phone, because I see it all the time where a phone is left on a desk.
Absolutely.
My father has a terrible habit of setting it on something and then walking away from it and wondering where it's at 20 minutes later.
Oh, yeah.
If he simply had something on his wrist that buzzed every time he walked away from it, yep, it would work out.
Absolutely.
It would work out pretty
same
well.
Same thing would have happened to me when I get in my truck and my phone syncs with my entertainment system, mm-hmm. and music starts playing.
Sure.
And I would have driven away and it would have lost Bluetooth connection.
Right.
I went, what?
Right.
And at that point, I probably would have realized that something was awry. But and I don't have any faith in the case that it's in that would protect it from being run over by a truck.
By a car, no. I don't think there are a lot of cases that will survive being run over.
I'm sure there's a lot of YouTube videos out there that
you know, here's the deal. There probably are cases, but none I would want. Because the rest of the time, it would annoy me that it was this literal brick that I had to carry around.
I'm just going to ask, do you pay insurance on your phone?
I don't.
You know, there's two sides to that coin. You can.
There's only one side.
There's two sides to that coin.
You say that.
I do.
Have you ever tried to turn that in? After you turn it
kids?
In. After you turn it in, then you still have to pay for it. You're better off especially if it's an iPhone that's worth money, even if it's broken, better off selling it and buying a new one. I have never seen an example of that working out where you actually, like, I turned it in and they just gave me a new phone and I didn't have to pay anything.
It's usually like $50 or something, you know.
Yeah,
but on a, you know, these phones are, you know, $300-$500 to replace them nowadays, $600.
Well, I'm glad you have them. Thanks, Kent.
I'm not saying I have them anymore, but when my kids were small, it seemed like, we'll talk about this on another program, but we are wrapping up the show for today. I want to thank my guests, Joel Brovelight, for being here, Amos Aesop, and of course, Jeff Litterick from the Bureau in Pierre. Thank you so much, Jeffrey. Tune in next, in 2 weeks, we'll be back on the air February 20th for another edition of Tech Radio featuring the computer guys. You guys have a great weekend, and we will see you again in 2 weeks.
Major support for Tech Radio with your annual donation and from SDN Communications. SDN Communications provides managed firewalls and routers for business data security. Learn more at SDNCommunications.com.
This is the High School Activities Update. I'm Steve Toom. The State One Act Play Festival will be on Thursday through Saturday at Sioux Falls O'Gorman in the Lorang Theater. In gymnastics, the ESD Conference Meet will be in Pierre on Saturday starting at noon. In wrestling, the Yankton Invitational will be at 9 a.m. on Saturday. The Big Dakota Conference Meet will be in Fort Pierre on Saturday starting at 10 a.m. And the Hill City Invitational gets underway Saturday at 9 a.m. Mountain Time. In boys basketball, it's a showdown between Woolsey Wessington and Sanborn Central Woonsocket in Forestburg on Saturday at 4 p.m. The Little Moreau Conference Tournament will be on Thursday through Saturday, two games each night on Thursday and Friday in Faith and in McIntosh starting at 6 o'clock Mountain Time, and all the teams in action on Saturday in Lemon at 1 p.m. Mountain Time. For more information, log on to SDHSAA.com.
This is South Dakota Public Broadcasting.